Hey, all.
Tonight we're talking about Kidlit.
Sure.
Hanukkah.
Mm-hmm.
And gin.
Gin! We're drinking the Just Peachy, L'chaim.
L'chaim.
Mm. I'm Jessica.
And I'm Yonit. Welcome to the Kiddush Book Club.
So Yonit brought over peach brandy.
Yeah, well, it's sweet.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's got going for it.
So we added it to, she walked in and said, I think we could put this in gin. And that is what we did. And we mixed it with some peach syrup. So it's now called the Just Peachy. Mm-hmm. And you put some LaCroix in yours.
Peach Ginny.
Peach, oh, you're right.
That was an opportunity.
That's like a Harry Potter drink. Okay, we'll call it the Peach Ginny.
Yeah.
Yes. And look, it's like the color of her hair.
It is.
And the color of your top.
It is.
You're very mustard today. Mustard and orange and all those wonderful fall colors.
It's fall.
It's not so fall.
I'm wearing a sweater skirt.
You are.
My skirt is a sweater.
You look so pretty, Yoni.
No, thank you.
Yes, you do.
I'm the best dressed software developer you've ever seen.
You really are. I've looked around this town.
Oh, yeah. It's a very low bar, though, to be honest.
There's a lot of backpacks.
This is a clean shirt.
Is it? That's the whole bar?
And nothing's written on it, so that's it.
That's true.
I'm already fancy.
Your fandoms are not on your person at this moment.
No, they are not.
Wow, not even on your socks.
Oh, no. So, look, I have a bracelet that says Perfectly Imperfect.
Okay.
One that says Lady Nerd.
Mm.
And one that says Breathe.
That's to remind yourself, Lady Nerd, to breathe.
Well, no, it just was a pretty bracelet.
Oh, okay. Did they come in a trio or you picked those
three? I picked out Lady Nerd. The other two were gifts.
Do you ever look at them and go, I need these right now?
So I have beaded bracelets that are superheroes. So there's a pink Superman, a purple Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and a baby blue Batman, I think. And it was funny because I was like to some guy at work, I'm like, look at my bracelets. And he's like, oh, thanks. And I'm like, no, look at Batman. And he goes, oh, that is cool.
Look at my fandom. It's pretty.
It's pretty.
I like that we're in a world where we can do that. And so actually, we're talking about gifts today in addition to Kidlit.
That's right.
Because, you know, a lot of the time on Hanukkah, what we're buying is presents for kids. And it can get exhausting trying to pick out 8 nights of toys. And I find that one night should be a book.
Well, one night's book, one night socks.
Yes. Oh, that's super the
Jewish.
Rule. Yeah.
One night's pajamas.
Mm-hmm.
Legit.
And we're going to do a thing this year where one night is each kid picks a tzedakah to give something to.
Oh, that's a nice idea.
Yeah, I heard that from someone else. Maybe I read it in a story. I can't remember. But each kid's going to get to pick. And my kids immediately knew what they wanted to give to.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So that I was like fifth night, because the fifth night is like when the majority of Northland. So
nice.
Isn't that a nice idea?
That's a nice idea.
Yes, but you're
increasing the light in the world.
Yes, you're increasing the light in the world. So put some light out into the world. So my daughter wants me to take her to Mary's Place, which is a organization that houses women and families and children who are homeless, so they can sleep somewhere at night.
Yeah, no child left outside.
No child. Yes, no child sleeps outside.
Yeah.
And the space is not like a regular homeless shelter where it's all open. It's privacy and for families, so they feel safer.
They do have community areas. They do community meals. They have a place for the kids to play.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
And my daughter wants to bring over her $18 donation with toys.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, if I was going to buy toys. But I guess we're buying toys because you're supposed to bring fresh toys.
Right. That makes sense.
Yes. Because someone is experiencing homelessness or doesn't have, you know, the money to purchase toys doesn't mean that you should be bringing them used.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff. If you're going to bring them something nice. Not that recycling and reusing is bad. We like that.
Right.
It's just,
you know, maybe amongst each other, we give our used hand-me-downs.
Right.
And then
when you're giving, let someone feel special.
Yeah.
Let someone really feel like this is a special present.
I actually need, speaking of recycling, reusing, my kids are remodeling their bedrooms. Okay, it's like, you know, champagne dreams on a on a juice box budget.
Yes.
So my daughter wants my son's bookcase.
Okay.
Which means we need to get rid of all the young age books off of the bookcase to make room for the young adult books that they're reading. So we need to sort through.
Yeah.
And donate. So,
good.
You know, we have little free libraries in the area. So some books may go there. Some books may go to other families that we know. And I guess I just need to look through and decide.
Mm-hmm. That's what we just did. We got rid of books. kids' books.
And my kids reread books. So anything that's a chapter above, they'll probably still read. Like, the art of Enid Blyton's have exploded. Like, the books, the pages are falling out. They're cracked in half. They're well read. These are, like, more picture or, like, very easy chapter
like books. Like, PJ Library books that they've received over the years.
Yeah, tons.
Yeah, we're going to talk later to Erica, who is out of Hong Kong PJ Library.
Which I just found out existed today.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I have so many questions.
I'm excited.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that. But PJ Library books, you know, they're age appropriate and they arrive based on your kid's age. And at some point, your kid grows out of them. So giving them to other people's kids at a Hanukkah party is a great gift to bring. Like wrapping up a stack of PJ Library books that are age appropriate for someone else's kids and giving them in, as a gift would be a really fun Hanukkah exchange.
Donating to your shul or school as well as
the
place.
Yes, to the local Jewish library collection.
As long as they're in good condition.
Obviously. Oh, yeah. And, you know, even some libraries will take that.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you come in with books of a certain condition and they'll say, yeah, we can add this to our stack.
Yeah, our library here, I don't know where other places that do it like this, but our library here has what we call yellow sticker books in my family, but basically they are books you can borrow without a library card. And the benefit of that is that there isn't a due date. So if it gets misplaced or, you know, needs more than 2 weeks or 6 weeks to read, then you're fine. So we like to take those out occasionally just to give us a little extra something that we don't have to return right away.
Good.
Yeah.
And then what about books to recommend? So I'm holding a book right now to recommend, not a kid's book. This is the ultimate Hanukkah present.
Oh my gosh.
Right? This is the Newish Jewish Encyclopedia by Stephanie Butnick, Leah Leibovitz, Mark Oppenheimer, the host of the Tablet Magazine's Unorthodox podcast.
One of our favorite podcasts.
We love them. We do. And they sent us the Newest Jewish Encyclopedia, and it's awesome. The cover says from Abraham to Zabars and everything in between. Now, the real last entry is not Zabars.
Right.
The real last entry is Zyklon B, but, you know, no one wants that on the cover.
Nobody wants that on the
cover. No one wants that on the cover. My favorite entry in here, though, is the entry from Monica Lewinsky. Have you read this before?
No, I have not.
American activist, television personality, fashion designer, prominent anti-bullying activist. Think something's missing? Fight us.
Nice. I know. I follow her on Twitter.
Yeah.
And she's great to follow.
Isn't this great? I mean, this she's great to follow. She makes jokes about herself every once in a while. But yeah, so this will this encyclopedia is amazing. It has everything from modern terminology, and there's individuals that are in this book, all the way to, you know, who is Shylock in Shakespeare, and the word Shvach, and what does Shomer Shabbos mean? And they're all funny.
What is Shiva? This is great. So when we recommend Jewish books, you know, like we mentioned a few in our previous episodes, if they use terminology you don't know, you'll probably find it in here.
That's what is a kugel?
If that's culturally not your thing, you're not Ashkenormative, then you maybe need to know what a kugel is.
Well, I was watching an old episode of Chopped tonight where they were given a kugel and ham. And one of the cooks was like, I don't know what kugel is, but it just, I can wash off the noodles and use them. And I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, that's a good idea. And meanwhile, the Jewish cook who was on that particular episode was like, I'm going to make kugel patties and fry them. It did not work out in her favor. She should have just rinsed off those egg noodles.
Well, it's really a casserole, so you just need to use it as such, right?
Yeah, but this is a really good book. It's got a entry for Scarlett Johansson. Yes, she's Jewish. Okay. It's got stuff about Jerusalem. Oh, the Jufro.
The Jufro. With, I want to say there's pictures. This has a lot of photos.
Yeah.
Which is, photo support is great. So the photo support for Yishalayim is great. The support for a few of the other ones.
Yeah, but the
Jufro is just a bunch of Jews who got froze.
Yeah, it's what happens to many of us when we let our hair do whatever it wants for a few months.
Springfield.
And Dylan. Is that Dylan?
Oh. Yes.
Bob Dylan.
Right, Bob
Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
He's the one from that show.
He's random froed out Jews. And I'm like, yes, this is accurate, but that's the whole definition. It's like, this is what happens to us when we let it do whatever it wants for a few months. I can attest that this happens to me when I let it do whatever it wants for one night.
Right. Yes. Same.
Yeah.
Same.
Okay.
How many Jewish mothers does it take to change a light bulb?
Never mind. I'll just sit here in the dark.
Right. I tweeted about this, that so a friend of mine, you know, hugs people. Oh, we talked about this in a previous one.
Yeah.
You know, you want a Jewish mother. There's a lot you're getting when you sign on for that.
Oh my God. This page is funny.
It looks like a stomach digestive system.
It is. It's fast days and how you feel about food on fast days. One, some Gedalia, Pekish, on Tanis Becharim, ready for a snack. On 10th of TV, how soon till lunch? On 17th of Tammuz, that sound is my stomach growling. Tanis Esther, hunger pains. Yom Kippur, starving here. Tisha B'Av is famished and banished. This is a funny book. Yeah, it is a pretty
very
book.
Very colorful, very
yes.
nice.
Yeah. We've posted a picture of it before. The things on the cover is all like names, like Abby Jacobson from Broad City.
Her name, the font.
The font is pretty. It's gold and shiny. I mean, the cover is everything from Auschwitz and Ashkenazim to, you know, guilt and Good Shabbos. I mean, this wow. is a very Jewish
Judah Maccabee, there we go.
Judah Maccabee,
Miami Beach.
Yes, Miami mm-hmm. Beach is an entry. So if you're thinking of getting a book, the newest Jewish encyclopedia, pushing this for the holidays.
Oh, definitely.
Nobody will be, like, this is the perfect present if you're, it's a good hostess present for,
oh, yes, definitely.
For going to a party.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, even though I already have a copy, if I was throwing a Hanukkah party and somebody brought this for me as a gift, I would be like, oh, thank you. And I would just have two copies.
Yeah, then you could loan out one and
yes.
keep one for a while.
Or my son could take it to college with him or Israel.
Whoa, too soon.
Too soon. Not for my child.
I know.
You'll hear in our conversation in another episode, we talked with someone who wrote a story about empty nesting. And we talked a little bit about the fact that my son leaves in 2.5 years. That's not a long time.
That's not a long time.
So yeah, when you're giving gifts, think about what, you know, it's okay to have multiples of things.
Yeah, exactly. Especially yeah. books.
Especially books.
Yeah.
You know, I just got a book in the mail from someone on Twitter and, you know, who was cleaning off her bookshelf and said, what do you need?
Yeah.
And I said, here's what I need. And what? It's in the mail? I get a Sarah J. Maas book for free.
Yes.
And it's a hardcover. Ooh. It's the only hardcover I have in the series. So gift people your used books also.
Yeah, definitely.
You had a suggestion for like, oh, you should, you know, what's a book that you would give as a gift? But I think you should give your book as a gift if you read it and you're done.
So here's the thing, is that I like keeping the book because I like loaning it out multiple times. If I love a book
yeah.
and I want to loan it out more than once, then it means something to
so
me.
You'll buy it for another person.
I'll buy it so that I can loan it out, or I'll buy it as a gift.
So what book right now would you buy as a gift for someone?
Buy as a gift to give away?
Yes.
You're saying?
Yes.
So I think, well, besides the newest Jewish encyclopedia, obviously.
I mean, gorgeous. Seriously.
What is something I would buy for somebody? Ooh, that's a good question.
Right?
So I would definitely buy, I bought that for myself. Would I buy also for somebody else? It's funny. So I also am pretty stingy about books that I spend money on. So I tend to borrow
mm-hmm.
or I use Kindle Unlimited. I borrow from the library. I get, you know, when they're free on Amazon. So if I buy a book, it also means something. So my bookshelves are like, it's a testament to how I feel about the author or the books or something.
Aww.
What would I buy for somebody? There have been a few books that are like gateway books. So maybe mm-hmm. one of the Jasper Fords.
Oh, like buy book one so that they can get into the series.
To get into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like buying someone an experience.
Right. And so here's the thing, that part of me wants to be nice. So I would say maybe Death Note. But so part of me wants to
yeah,
be nice and buy
that.
The expensive full series in one book. And part of me wants to be mean and buy just the first edition, like the first manga, and then make you figure out how to get all the rest of them. So.
That's funny. I like that. What's a book that have you ever been given a book as a gift that you're like, this is, I treasure this. Like it arrived as a present and you held it to your chest. Like, wow. How did you know?
You know, it's surprising. I get so few books considering how much I love books.
Do you think it's because people think you just own it already?
They probably just don't know how to pick a book that I haven't read.
See, that's okay. When yeah. I found recently and I was in my old bedroom, my parents' house, taking a Shabbos nap and, then afterwards, I was rifling around, and I found an old letter from this woman named Mrs. Warfield. She was mm-hmm. my Saftan Saba's housekeeper, and she was like basically like part of the family as it was like back in, you know, yeah. 70s and 80s. It was like that. And she got me for my bat mitzvah, apparently a Barnes & Noble gift card.
Ooh.
And the card said, a little birdie told me you like books. happy bat mitzvah.
Oh, that's nice.
And I looked at this card. I'm like, I think I saved this for a reason. I didn't save every card I got. I saved that card. Not just because I loved Mrs. Warfield, but because, like,
she got you. She saw you.
She saw me.
Yeah.
She's like, I see you.
Yeah.
And I saw her. And I was 12 to be seen and be given the opportunity to buy a book. See, that's a fun present. If you give an Amazon gift card, they might spend it on something else. But right. Barnes & Noble.
You know they're going to buy a book.
You know, well,
local bookstore. Find your local bookstore and see if they do gift cards.
Yes. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
So that people could do that for you.
I actually, now that I'm thinking about it. So Brian Ballantyne, who we had on a previous episode.
Yes.
He bought me this grown-up adult coloring book. Where it has sassy sayings on it. It's not the curse word one exactly, but it's one like, you know, go away. But it's all decorative and floral. So it was like really like channeling how I was thinking at that point. So
adult color. There was one year where we all got my sister-in-law adult coloring books.
Oh.
Like literally each of us got her a different one without realizing we'd all done it.
That's awesome.
We're like, well, you like to draw.
So here's the thing. If you buy me the same book I already have.
Yeah.
Okay. But you buy me the same coloring book I already have, I'm just going to color in it again.
So right. That's okay.
Yeah.
One year, we accidentally all bought my dad the same birthday card.
That's awesome. We've done that before.
It wasn't just to each of my siblings, my sister here and my brother here. It was that my sister in New York mailed the same card.
That's awesome.
By coincidence.
That's awesome.
Can you imagine?
Everyone saw it and was like, this is for you.
He opened up the cards at dinner and he was like, holy crap. Oh my God. Like one of it was it my mom or my dad? I don't remember, but sometimes that's something awesome. Just fits a person.
Yes.
And I think that when it comes to Hanukkah presents, you know, there's something special about being seen.
Yes.
And a book can make a person feel understood.
So it's funny that you have to know the person. So what I was notorious for was, so buying people books is something that I like to do. I'm the book yenta. I feel like it's one of my love languages.
It's your job.
The problem is that not everyone likes books.
Mm-hmm.
And so just because my dad likes golf doesn't mean he'll like a book about golf.
That's a good point.
And just because my brother likes football, he didn't appreciate the book about football. And, you know, so I was really like, oh, you guys don't really like books, but here's a book about something you do like. Maybe you'll like it. And not so much.
That's not their love language.
Exactly.
Right. So you have to think about how the other person is going to enjoy what you're giving them.
Exactly.
And what will make them feel seen. Not what can you take about yourself and interpret for the other person.
So I like to buy my kids Hanukkah pajamas and socks. And especially because they'll wear them year round.
That's true.
So my kids don't care that it's not Hanukkah anymore. They're still wearing their Hanukkah pajama t-shirt as a t-shirt to school.
Speaking of the perfect present you'll wear year round until it's summer, I'm wearing right now, again, I washed it, so now it smells like laundry again, is Sephira Creative.
Yes, that's beautiful.
Her Hanukkah sweater is a over-the-head hooded navy sweatshirt with a pocket in front, drawstrings, and it's beautiful. It's art. It's really stunning. If you go to SephiraCreative.com, you can still order it up until Hanukkah, and then it's disappearing from her site.
Yeah. And it's a pretty one, which is funny because I was always, I've embraced the kitschy, tacky Hanukkah sweaters.
Me too.
So I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh, it's kind of pretty.
It's art. It's wearable
it's
art.
It's kind of too pretty, I think, for what I'm going for.
It's pretty. And then people stare at you. And it even has the original, like, Beis HaMikdash menorah on it.
Nice.
Not a modern Hanukkah. Yeah. It's wearable Sephira. I know. I said, some people were like, can you do an Eskadol Hayapo for Israelis? She's like, when I moved to Israel.
Aww.
You know, that would be a great answer, Sephira. Tell people when you make Aliyah, you'll switch the sweatshirt.
Yes.
Speaking about things in past tense, my
it's okay.
It's the gin.
Let me get you.
It's the gin. Now would be a good time to try to have me recap a book or a movie or a history lesson. okay, so other presents. What book would I get someone? I mean, I know for me that when my husband gets me like an autographed copy of something that I love, that's special to me.
Yeah.
So if you're thinking about getting someone an autographed book, make sure it's like their favorite author and they don't already have it.
Yes.
Yes. He's pretty good at that.
Oh, that's nice. I also really like beautifully bound or like beautifully illustrated versions of a book. Even if I already have it, to get like Barnes & Noble and some places are like pretty good about having like beautiful leather bound editions of this, that, and the other, you know, or the graphic novel version of a book I love.
Oh, that's a good idea.
You know, the Neil Gaiman, he particularly has quite a few that are beautifully illustrated. That's fun.
That's a good idea.
It's just different.
You could also take your kids, if it's a thing you're looking for your kids, you could do a, like, third night of Hanukkah, we're going to the bookstore trip.
My kids love that.
Yeah. That's a great, they love picking out their own books, and they walk home, like, clutching the book to, like, look at my Hanukkah present that I picked out for myself, but really, you were the one taking them there. That's a good present.
And, you know, I like the way that our local, one of our local bookstores is organized, because they have a variety of displays.
Yes.
The tables and bookshelves, face out, you know, spine out.
Although I did go in there and turn, like, my Twitter friends, who I consider actual friends, their covers out.
Nice.
Like, when I see someone whose book, I'm like, I really enjoyed that book. Also, that person's really nice and engages covers me out. A lot. Cover out. And I turned the cover out, and because I hope that one day someone will do that for me. And I'm like, turning covers out. First of all, they're pretty covers, and they should get to be seen.
Yes.
Speaking of, if you're looking for middle grade Jewish, obviously we've read Sophia Pasternak's Song and the Dragon.
Yes.
Highly recommend.
Beautiful cover.
Yes. Beautiful cover. What about YA? Do you have any recommendation for a new YA that you would recommend someone buying a teenager? It's a tough one.
Yeah.
Why is so diverse now?
You know what? I think it depends on the person. I really do try and match people with, I'm like pulling out my Goodreads right now that you're asking that. I really do try and match people with things that I think that they'll like.
Yeah.
I've read some good ones. I mean, you know, some of the authors we've spoken to, all of those books would be great options.
Well, so let's actually, Wasted Pretty is a great present.
Right?
That's yes.
You know, like, yes. Especially for people in our age range.
Yeah.
Like, how nostalgic would that be? I mean, it's not just for young adults, right?
No, like it's a good adult our age too.
Would love the, like I said, the nostalgia of the book being written in that time.
If you have a friend who is a 90s teen, or you know is a huge Myself Club Life fan, if their Spotify thing at the end of the year said that they spent all year listening to Alanis Morissette or anything grunge.
She has the
Cranberries.
There's the new stage version of Jagged Little Pill, right?
So, yeah, like, you could always buy someone tickets to a show. That's a good one, but it has to be open so they can pick their seats. But you can buy them "Wasted Pretty" by Jamie Beth, who we've talked about here. I love that we're recommending books that we've read here as opposed to other things. Yeah. Like the upcoming interview you're about to hear is one we did with Valerie Frankel for her book Chum for the Holidays, which is a really fun gift for a kid.
Yes,
yes.
And, you know, they're just fun books to read. So I'm very picky about kids' books, because you're going to read that book a million times.
Yes.
So it better be good, and it better be funny.
Yes.
And it better be,
well, Chum for the Holidays is funny, it's silly, it's Chum, it's holiday oriented. So it's a good, again, if you're going to someone else's house for a party and you want to bring a present for their child, it's actually a really good idea.
Yeah.
It's also a chapter book. It's a good read aloud at night book. So I think that's a highly recommend. And the following is our conversation with Valerie. So Yonit and I are here with Valerie Frankel, author of Chum for the Holidays, which was everything I love. Valerie, welcome.
Welcome. Oh,
thanks.
Oh, it's on every gift-giving list I've seen so far.
Awesome. I actually didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Every time I see someone post a picture of, like, here are the books you need to give, you know, as Hanukkah presents, it's always Chum for the Holidays, always included, which I think is funny because it's about all the holidays. But, yeah, this is the gift-giving time of year, though.
Definitely. I think Carben, my publisher, was aware of that, releasing it in September to hit the school year. And then, yes, welcome to the holiday season.
Well, congratulations on a successful release of your book. Can you tell us a little bit about Chum for the Holidays? Give Yonit and I the whole primer.
Yes. Chum stories are a tradition in Jewish folklore. It's about a town that's so silly that everything they do just comes out kerflummoxed. There's a famous episode where there's an old man who knocks on everybody's door to wake them up in the morning. But the man grows so old that he can't possibly get out of bed and go around the town in Poland in the snow at 6 in the morning. So all the people of home decide to very kindly take their doors off their hinges and walk over his house with us so he can knock on their doors.
That's the kind of world we're dealing with. So within this world, I was actually teaching religious school and wanted Helm stories about what would they do on Tu B'Shvat and Purim and Passover and all the holidays. And I couldn't find any, just general Helm stories or Hanukkah. So I sat down and wrote one of each, and that's what this book is. Silly stories of what the people of Helm would do if it's Shavuot or it's Purim and they get this mixed up.
I love that. You know, I growing up, I'd always read that one Helm book, right? There's the one about the jar of fools, and the concept being that God gave each angel, right, a jar of different personality traits, and that the angel was flying over the world, and that I guess that the personality trait inside the jar of fool jar rubbed off on the angel, and he tripped and he dropped the jar, right? That's the concept. And they all landed in one spot. Okay. All right. So I'm getting it right. I remember this from my childhood. Yoni, did you ever read the Helm stories?
Yeah, I've definitely read stories that take place there with that same kind of thing. But, it's a very common story trope for children. Like, my kids love those kinds of, like, oh, no, like, that doesn't, they like feeling like, oh, I can figure this out. Why can't they figure this out?
Yes, it's like Amelia Bedelia. Valerie, when you were writing it, did you have in mind any Amelia Bedelia style stuff with everyone taking things quite literally?
I actually didn't. I was really channeling the Helm stories themselves and asking, all right, if the people are this foolish, what would they do if they all put on Purim costumes? Well, they believe they were their Purim costumes, and then something sees a duck, and something sees a goat, and what do they do with 30 little girls dressed as Queen Esther, all think they're the real Queen Esther. But nowadays, I have been introducing the book to people who don't know Helm, as it's like Amelia Bedelia, and then I see the light bulb go on. Oh, that thing! Yes, how would Amelia Bedelia celebrate Jewish holidays?
Oh, I love that. That's a great way to sell it. I mean, Helm really is a part of our, I think, mostly Ashkenazic Jewish canon, right? And so I love that it's kind of like public, uncopyrighted canon, like anyone can jump in and make up Helm stories.
Yeah, they're not from the old country, but they feel like they're from the old country. I brought in the stock characters, it takes place in the same place. They have the same lack of technology. So yeah, I was having fun with what could some more stories be if we added them to the collection now.
I mean, it makes a wonderful Hanukkah present. You know, Yonit and I are recording this for our Hanukkah present episode, but we could also just as easily include this in our Jewish kidlit episode, right, Yonit?
Yeah, I think, I am always looking for a present for my kids at every holiday, and because this collection includes more than one holiday, it means that if you don't, give it out, or if you have more than one child in your life, which many will do, consider it a gift for any holiday, right? Like, because I think kids having something new to read is special, especially like, a lot of the services can be long, a lot of the holidays are a bit unstructured. Like, reading time has been on my kids' list always for every holiday.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Valerie, so you just put this out with Carben, but how long ago did you write this book? I'm always interested in the sloth-like movement of the writer's experience.
This may be a record. I wrote them 15 years ago.
What?
Because that's when I was teaching religious school, and I really was using these stories throughout the year and having so much fun with them. And then big, wide-eyed, not yet published me sent them out to all kinds of Jewish publishers, and nobody wanted it. And after that, once or twice, I sent it out again, and nobody wanted it. And this time I sent it out again, and actually two publishers wanted it. So I guess the time came around or something. But that might not be the most inspirational.
No, that's very, no, I just, that's very Don't inspirational. Stop. Yeah, that's perseverance. Exactly. You got published because of perseverance, because you didn't give up on something awesome.
You believed in it and you felt that it needed to be told.
I absolutely felt that this book needed to exist. Every time I looked, there still were not Helm stories for all the holidays.
Oh, yeah. It's very rare to even see Helm stories anywhere. And I'm really hoping that with your book back in, like, out in the market, that people start to kind of reintroduce it into their personal writing canon and kind of add it back into their books. I was reading The Sadik of the Seven Wonders. Someone recommended it to me. And I don't know if you've ever read that, but it opens with, him having his beard stuck in the door of the Beit Midrash in Chelm, where they're all learning, and no one can figure out how to get him out. So they talk about maybe dismantling the entire building around this man. And finally, at the end, someone comes up and suggests, you know, let's all leave and discuss it outside. And they open the door, and his beard falls out. They're like, oh, magic. So, the Chelm stories can really contribute to your book. So to books in general. So when I was at the local bookstore, I was like, oh, you only have one Hanukkah book on your holiday display. It's prominently displayed, but there's only one. You should order, Chelm for the holidays. And she immediately got behind the counter and ordered it right on the spot when she saw it. She was like, this looks beautiful and fun and great and 100% we could display year round. So I'm hoping that more kids will read it and grow up with it in their canon.
That would be awesome. I'm actually the author. This was book number 75, and the other books, they're mostly nonfiction, they're mostly academic, and the bookstores don't really want them. To be honest, my academic publisher is not great to bookstores, as they go, you can have like a 5% discount, which means you won't take them at all. So bookstores are greeting me with, oh, it's returnable, we could stock this, it's from a known publisher, this has an age on it, this could actually work, and I've just sitting there with my eyes wide going, oh, I guess this is how publishing is supposed to be instead of all this academic stuff.
Okay. So books 76 through 80 are more Chelm stories? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, I think I'm up to 77 published books right now, so I can't tell you what. Well, I have a good guess on what book 78 is going to be. It's halfway through, but yeah. Books 1 through 74 are about 5 parodies because I do write other humor stuff. Can't resist that. I'm the author of the Henry Potty series, which is about what it sounds like for Harry Potter age. Oh. And a lot of academic nonfiction. I wrote a book on the heroine's journey that's quite popular called From Girl to Goddess. And I write so many books called like Buffy and the Heroine's Journey, How Game of Thrones Will End, Doctor Who and Women, just all of these examinations of feminism and symbolism in the really popular series.
So these sound like really good gift ideas, right?
I was just thinking, like, so when you buy Chelm for the Holidays for my children, please buy those other ones for me.
The Buffy one. I want the Buffy one. So you've been writing nonfiction most of this time and a few parodies, right?
Yep.
How does it feel to be in this space now, in the Carben publishing space?
It really feels like a different world. Around the time I first got published, I was invited to join a Facebook group for Jewish authors of Jewish material, I should say. And they're letting me know about new markets, new opportunities. Wow. They're sharing each other's books, and they're just such different books than I was working with in academia. And Chelm for the Holidays is a PJ Library book, so I'm getting into that audience, finding out about that world. Congrats. Everyone in my synagogue is walking up to me, my kid ordered your book. And I'm just going, wow, different world.
If it's a PJ Library, that means there'll also be read-alongs. There'll also be like other things. I think that's like the children's market has a lot of opportunity for interactive events.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm really excited about this. I mean, first of all, not just because I love the Chelm stuff, but also because Jewish Kid Lit, like you wrote a book that is not quite like a picture book, right? Like it's kind of a somewhere between beginner reader and middle grade reader. So how did you come up with that was the target market for this particular book?
Technically, I guess we could label it as a chapter book if we want to label it, and it does actually have illustrations. So
yes, technically, it is an illustrated chapter book. That's right, and I love the illustrations for sure.
Yes, they're sweet and cartoony, and the cover is fun, which is good because the PJ Our Way kids are picking the book themselves.
Well, actually, Valerie, could you tell us where people can buy your book?
It's on Amazon. It's in bookstores. If it's not in bookstores, you ask. The bookstore will totally get it for you.
Awesome. Yeah, that's true, because that happened when I went in. So, and where can people follow you on social media anywhere if they're interested in, or do you have a website if they're interested in learning more?
Yeah, I'm at Valerie Frankel on Twitter. I'm Valerie Estelle Frankel on Facebook. I've got a website at VE Frankel with news on all the books.
Yay, and of all course, of them, including the Buffy one.
Yes, so many books. And if you go to Amazon and type Valerie Estelle Frankel, you would get the full list.
Well, I saw the bookmark that came with the book from you, which was awesome. My teenage son picked it up and he's reading all the different titles on it. He's like, that looks awesome. That looks awesome. That looks awesome. Wow, she's written so much. And I'm like, she really has. This is great. When do you have time in your life to write this much?
I would like to thank the Diet Coke Company for all they've got done to make this happen.
Sponsorship opportunity.
Diet Coke. Valerie says you should sponsor us. I'm not making the, I don't make the rules. Valerie, are you a coffee drinker?
No, hence the Diet Coke.
Oh my goodness. I don't know how you get by. Well, we love having you on here. You're a very prolific writer, and this is a really special treat to add to our Hanukkah list and to even get to talk to the author of something that's at the top of our gift list for the holidays. And I hope that people order this with enough time to get it by Hanukkah or Christmas if you're giving it to your, you know, relative who likes to read about Jewish stuff or Jewish relative who doesn't keep Christmas. Gifts are gifts. Enjoy. And it also makes a good Afikoman present.
That's right.
Yeah, I was about to say, if it doesn't make it in time, you can hand it out at Tu Bishvat, I suppose.
That's true. You have so many holidays in there. Valerie, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. This was wonderful.
It really was fun. Thank you so much.
It was great to hear from Valerie.
Yeah, that was so much fun. It was good talking to her.
Yeah, I really love connecting with other Jewish writers and people involved in the Jewish book industry,
yeah,
which is definitely why I'm excited that we also have another interview coming up with Erica Lyons from PJ Library. But first, I want to hear your YA recommendation.
So I love Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman's books.
Mm-hmm.
So I would recommend Interworld by Neil Gaiman and We Free Men,
mm-hmm,
by Terry Pratchett.
Those as a gift.
Too. As a gift, yeah. Because, okay, again, they're gateway, right? They give you a taste of the author, and then the author, those both are prolific authors. You could just, you're set now. Go.
You know, people who like to read like getting a book as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
They like a free book. I don't want to spend all my money. And sometimes I like owning the book, not taking it out from the library. I like free books.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, give me a book that you seen me go, oh, I wish I could read that. Hook me up. I will read it. So you have to think about if you have a teenager that you're considering giving a book to because you know they like to read, they'll take it.
Right. And you could write a little note. This is why I thought you'd like it.
Yeah.
Show them that you see them. You know, you'd be surprised.
Yeah.
It's not an assignment there. Oh, I got a book. No, it's a here. This is a journey that I think you'll appreciate going on. Talk, yes, to me afterwards.
Yes.
You know, let's talk about it.
Right. You can even just write in the note, OMG, you have to talk to me when you're done reading this book. I, yes, cannot wait to hear of what you think of chapter 7.
Yeah.
Like, just to kind of tempt them as opposed to telling them, because the teenagers don't like to be dictated to.
Right.
Right.
I don't like either. You know, when someone says, oh, read this by next week, I'll be like, nope.
Well, I just literally handed you a book. I was like, you haven't read this? Here's this. And
I'll add it to my pile. I'll get there some point.
Yes. And you have added books to my pile,
right,
and, you know, books that come in the mail. And my Mystery Maccabee book that showed up was Naomi Novik. Like, I mean, free books are fun.
That's right.
And their presents, they make it extra, make you feel special.
I also find that it stretches what I would pick for myself to get a recommendation from someone else. because I get stuck in a rut. I talk about this a lot, you know, where I just want the same thing over and over and over again. And then someone gives me something that's so different. I actually quoted Stassi from Next Level Basic the other day. And nice. I was like, I read that book. I wouldn't have read that book if you hadn't recommended it to me. It never would have crossed
my do you remember what you quoted?
Yeah, because I was getting my eyebrows done and the gal was like laying down some real skin truth bombs on us. And she was talking about using oil to wash your face. I'm like, Stassi does that. Oh, and she looks at me and she's like, yes, Stassi. And I'm like, she's looking at me like, how do you know Stassi? You know, and I was like, you don't even know I read her book.
Oh my God. Did you tell her?
Yeah, I did. Oh, and then I bought the oil to wash my face. And
was she a Bravo fan in the end? Is that what,
we didn't get into that part. We talked mostly skincare, but like, you know, it made us bond a little faster to have that connection.
Good for Stassi.
Yeah.
That she went from being a waitress on Vanderpump Rules to being a person who's just known by one name.
That's right.
Just Stassi.
Just Stassi.
Like, no, there's no other famous Stassi. So you, it's like Cher, you get to just be Stassi. Damn, how do I get that?
That was a good recommendation because I would recommend that book actually as a gift.
Yeah.
Because she talks a lot about you do you. And the only thing she thinks is completely reprehensible are people like me whose cell phones are always dead.
Oh my God. Otherwise,
she's like, you do you. If you want to wear cheap shoes, don't let people shame you into, you know, not rocking your whatever. If you want to wear a side ponytail, even though it's not in fashion, do that.
Wear your side pony. You know, if you have a friend who's a Bravoholic, that's a good present. If you're looking for a gift for your wife or sister or whoever who watches Bravo, that's a fun gift.
It's a super fun gift.
And there's also a Bravo coloring book. We talked a little about coloring books earlier.
I'm not a Bravo fan. I never watch any of those things. And I still enjoyed that book because I felt it was very empowering.
Yeah.
She really was. She really has a good
message. I think that's why people like her, is because she just stands up and says, like, I don't have to apologize for liking the things I like.
Yeah, she actually has a great little blurb about when she was a teenager and she met, she took an acting class in Hollywood with a famous acting coach, and she met an actor and they're like, well, what did you think about the class? And she's like, it was not great. The classes I take in high school are much better. And she like put it out there because normally people would be like, oh my gosh, it was so amazing.
Inspiring.
And
they're funny.
Exactly. Yeah. And she's like, no, I actually didn't feel like I got anything out of it. Like she has that truth, honesty.
She's just truthful. And she says, like, I like murder, cemeteries, and Game of Thrones.
Hot dogs.
And hot dogs. Right. Mm-hmm. Like they're in, you know, and that's okay. Like what you like.
Yeah.
If you're open about what you like, then people will hopefully get you gifts based on what you like. And don't yuck other people's yums.
There was I'm in a group on Facebook, and some well-meaning person, it turns out he was well-meaning, but he went with, oh my gosh, it's nice to find women who are into more than just Harry Potter. And we're all like, excuse me? Excuse me? First of all, we like Harry Potter.
There are thousands of us.
Second of all, there are plenty of people who like other nerdy things other than Harry Potter. Yeah. But there's nothing wrong with liking Harry Potter.
Right.
It doesn't make us childish. It doesn't make us.
That's right. Don't yuck whatever. Her yum.
Exactly. And I'm not even such a Harry Potter. By the way, I'm not a Potterhead like other people. That's but like
good dating advice too. There's part of it is, well, he has to like everything I like and she has to like everything I like. And I'm like, if you'll find that, first of all, your likes change.
Yes.
And how do you know that you're going to watch a new TV show and he's going to be into it? Or you're going to discover a new band and he's going to be into it. And then all of a sudden he won't like the things you like. So
what do you mean? We both like eating peanut butter out of the jar with spoons. We can't be together.
We
now.
Can't be together because we listen to different music.
Well, come on now.
We can't be together because we have different favorite Rebbe quotes.
What you do is you have to appreciate that someone else is passionate about something.
Yeah. If you can look at the person, it's kind of like when you took a class where it wasn't your subject, but the teacher loved it.
Right.
And you could feel the vibe off that teacher that they just love sociology. It made it more fun.
Yeah, totally did.
If you didn't like the subject.
I mean, I get it. I have friends who are like, what do they call them? Football widows. Or whatever, where like, you know, it's like, okay, that's, you know, you talked about sports and I kind of tuned out after the first few minutes.
Yeah.
So we're talking hockey or is it baseball season? I don't really know what's happening. You know, but I'm excited that you're excited about it. But that means you also need to listen when I'm like ranting about like a shoe that I, you know, I got
condos
and I want the ones with a 3/4 heel. And they don't have those ones.
You should be able to say to the other person, listen, I love that you love what you love.
Yes.
But I also let you talk about what you love. So you have to let me talk about what I love. That's the deal.
Tell me again about how you found the most perfect latke recipe.
Yes, you tell me about the most perfect latke recipe. With my husband, it's okay. Yes, you can tell me again about the Back to the Future thing you found through your car. And I'll go, wow, that's so cool. And you could tell me about all the cool Star Wars stuff. And when I tell you about Dave Matthews Band, you just have to be like, wow, that's great.
I'm so glad you got that opportunity. That's so neat.
How neat. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You have to be excited.
Your fandom expanded. He wrote a new song. Yay.
Oh, my husband gets celebrate together. So upset when his fandom follows me on Twitter or gets involved with me. And he's like, hey, how come Lenny Dykstra doesn't follow me on Twitter? I'm like, who's Lenny Dykstra? I know, it's really funny, but he gets excited about it. He's like, my wife is a god, you know, so appreciating what other people love and letting them appreciate what you love is good dating advice, and it's also good gift giving advice. And it is the season of love,
and open yourself to new possibilities, to trying something new, learning something new. I mean, you know, we're going to talk to Erica and hopefully you'll learn something new about a part of the world and
community
you didn't know about. I mean, I definitely did.
Yeah. I'm excited now to learn more about Hong Kong.
Oh, definitely.
And the Hong Kong Jewish community and the history. I genuinely didn't know that information. Like, in my head, well, we already recorded our interview with her, so we're going to talk about her in past tense and then play her. But I was thinking, I have bet that the stuff she knows about Hong Kong Jewish history, like, my friends who are Jewish history teachers love to know and love to read her chapters.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, so that they could themselves. And then she also has fantastic book recommendations.
Oh, definitely. And when she said that the community was small, I was like, oh yeah, I bet it is. And then she named a number. I was like, oh what?
Yes. You're going to have to listen to that interview from the very fascinating Erica, which is coming up right now. So we've got Erica Lyons from Hong Kong with us actually today. Erica, welcome to the Kiddush Book Club.
Great, thanks. Happy to be here.
Oh my gosh. So Erica, tell us what it is that you do so you can tell all of our listeners what your role is.
A couple of roles. Community-wise, but sort of as a volunteer, I founded and now run PJ Library Hong Kong. So I've been running for just over 2 years now. And we're a small program because we're a small community. But then also on a community level, I also am the chair of the Hong Kong Jewish Historical Society, the Hong Kong delegate to World Jewish Congress. Again, it's a small community. So I guess sort of the list goes on from there. But I think that once you put your hand up to be involved, you tend to really be involved. So.
Yes, if you want to get something done, find a busy person.
Yes.
True. So, and less people here, so it's easier.
Well, how big is the community, would you say, in Hong Kong?
So we're about 5,000 to 6,000. But it's been about the same. I've been here 17 years, and we're steady at about the same number. They're about 5,000 to 6,000.
And so. What brought you to Hong Kong?
So initially, it was for my husband's job. We got married and said we wanted to go overseas at some point. Thought it'd be a great opportunity, and much better when the kids were either before we had kids, which we had kids quickly. So then we said, well, they were younger. So we left New York with a newborn and a one-year-old, a 7-week-old and a one-year-old. I put my job on hold, and it was a 2-year commitment. And we promised everybody, including my job, my parents would be back in 2 years. And 17 years later, here we are. So,
you know, you're not the first person from Hong Kong who I've had this exact conversation with, where they say
everybody. Yeah.
What is it about the community there that makes people say, I'm only going to stay for 2 years, and then they stay for 20?
So I think that there's a lot of things. I mean, I think just the expat experience, I think just is just a great experience. It's been great for our family, great for my kids. Otherwise, we wouldn't stay. But in particular, the Hong Kong community, up until the past few months, when we've had sort of these protests. Before that, I always said that there's no safe place left in the world, but if there is one, it is here. And we've just had a really, really safe place to live. There's no anti-Semitism. It's just a very easy life. And there's different reasons to live different places, and easy is a good one. In terms of the Jewish community, I think, oddly enough, that is what keeps my husband and I here. We sort of struggled with a lot of things about raising Jewish children in the U.S. I think that if you're part of sort of a smaller, more sort of more insular Orthodox community, maybe you can avoid some of that. But otherwise, it's, you know, things like assimilation is something that really concerned us. We wanted to raise children with a really, really high level of literacy and not really in a small Orthodox enclave, because that's not how either one of us have grown up. And the struggle about how to do that and sort of retain that really strong Jewish identity. And in a small community where it's been very, very easy in many interesting different ways. We have an Orthodox but pluralistic school, which is very, I think, unusual in the Jewish world. So it's, you know, you, in one class, you can have a child that has a Haredi rabbi as a father, and you can have a child that has two Israeli dads, you know, in the same class. And these kids grow up from age one through age 18 like that. And that's just normal, you know, just they make fun of each other in the best sort of ways. Like, you know, you're either sort of the observant cousin or the non-observant cousin, but your family, like you just grow up like that. So I think it's a really, really great way to grow up with sort of a better understanding of, you know, who we are as a people and a better idea of peoplehood. So,
well then, so how did PJ Library come to Hong Kong, and what are the challenges you found in bringing it there?
Yeah, so initially I had been contacted by PJ Library just because of sort of all this other communal work that I do a number of years ago. And I generally don't like when people come to me with a project and I sort of have to be a naysayer, right? Yeah. But everything that I understood about the program, I kept saying wouldn't work here. You know, we don't have a federation. So that's kind of piece of like the funding piece, you know, that can't happen that way. People tend to be very transient. You know, our community is about 50% of people like me who come for long-term, 50% are here for a year or two and then gone. People move flats every year. So distribution would be complicated. People clear out for the 2 months over the summer. So nothing sort of about a traditional, that I understood, about a traditional PJ program really made sense to me. But my husband and I, again, because raising our children with Jewish literacy was sort of like, that was our one of our, you know, really, really important goals to us with raising children. PJ Library just appealed to both of us on so many levels. And so a couple times, you know, I'd get a call from them and I would say no for all these reasons. And, you know, I approached sort of the real founders of our community said, like, look, here's a project, you want to fund it? And they said, why would I want to buy, you know, Jewish books for rich kids? Why do I want to buy books for rich kids, right? And I was kind of trying to explain that that's the piece that you're missing. It's, yes, we have access to books, but we don't have access to Jewish books here, really, maybe more so. In New York, you can go into Barnes & Noble or wherever and buy a book that may have Jewish content. Here, we don't have that at all, and certainly not English language, and obviously not Jewish content either, so.
Have you seen the impact to the community since it started?
Well, we're slow going. I still have people after the year and a half mark. I still have people every year at the end of the year that contact me and say, you know, like, great, thanks so much for the program. How do I return my books to the library? I'm like, no. And I write it, I guess, like with any community, with any communal organization, you know, you write the same email like 100 times, like, they are yours to keep. I'm like, I wrote it in bold 50 times.
Well, but, it's PJ Library. It's funny. I never thought they're yours. That should be the slogan for PJ Library.
Exactly.
They're yours to keep until your kids age out of them.
Yes, and then give them away.
And I think that part of the challenge for me has been just because in PJ Library in the US is such a known sort of brand. And I feel like if you walk into a Jewish community, you don't have to market it. Everybody either is looking for it, they know about it, they're collecting them from where they live before. But because we're largely not an American community, Americans are definitely in the minority. I've had to first, you know, that's why, again, I'm having these conversations where, no, you keep the books. What is PJ, you know, and sort of kind of explaining it again. So I think that one thing I can definitely do is be better sort of with going forward. And I say this, kind of marketing it better to people so people really understand what it is. You know, I'd like to do more to sort of to expand it as well. So we're about just under 100 children in the program. So.
That's awesome.
I actually get books in Hebrew as well. So I think that they're expanding the PGA library programs as well, not just location-wise, but as content and languages and all the different covers.
Oh, yes, yeah. Sifriya Pajama. We signed up for that.
Though that's just available in Israel, right? So I have, it's, your program can only be one program. So my program has to be an English program.
Oh, so you should ask.
Yeah, so I have a couple of Russian speakers that I brought books back from them from Moscow. I was in Moscow a couple times last year, and I literally just brought their books back for them. So again, because our program here, I'm running an English program. So it's, so you sort of choose your program with it, with the international division. So we read a little differently here. So.
That is amazing. So what books are like, do you see a difference in what you find are popular there versus what PJ is doing in other places book-wise?
People here are just so hungry for it. I mean, especially the people that are here longer term, like they literally don't have Jewish books, right? Because you're going back to maybe wherever you're from for a month over the summer, and you're not necessarily going, you know, you're buying all the other things you think you need for the year, and you're not necessarily bringing back books. So people literally either had almost no Jewish content in their own home libraries or very, very little. And then I also found the school really said to me, as soon as they kind of found out, they said, wait, this is crazy. You're giving kids books. What about us? Because we, you know, we're in contact with more children than anybody else. Right. And so I've started, you know, on my list of 100 subscribers, I have the primary, you know, I have the lower primary, the upper primary, you know, kind of written in his names like that, you know, lower primary, primary as subscribers, just so that they can get those books also each month. And same thing with the congregations as well. Like they, I think you take for granted that your synagogue has a library available to, you know, sort of pick up a book and read your child a book during services. And we don't really have that here. So I found that I'm sort of sharing books with those. I mean, great. You're sharing books with those communities too, but it puts them in more children's hands that way too.
I mean, she's like Yoni. She's like you, but in Hong Kong.
No, I'm not looking at that. She's definitely
being Yoni's like the book Yenta, like a bag of books over her shoulder every Shabbat, just passing them out. But your books aren't always Jewish.
They're not always Jewish. So
how, I don't know if
I'm because we don't have an Erev. We also don't have an Erev. So you can't bring, you can't bring your books. So I have to have my books there.
Our Erev is gone for 9 months and my reading quota dropped like a stone. Like I did not finish as many books last year as this year because of that situation.
That's fascinating. So because you don't have an Erev, you can't bring books to shul to trade.
Correct. Right. Yeah. So.
So I was gonna say, I don't know if this is outing you, but I know that you are writing, and I was wondering how much of that is influenced by your involvement with getting Jewish books out.
Again, it's also just everything that I do, sort of all roads kind of bring me back to where I was. I was running my own magazine for about ten years. I just closed it recently to focus on other things called Asian Jewish Life. So it's broad art, culture, history, all focused Jewish on the sort of the Far East as a whole. So I think that like the Jewish writing part, again, I think it's sort of, you know, I have four children, I'm always looking for books, and I kind of find that when I'm reading, choosing books for myself to read, I'm choosing YA books all the time and middle grade books, and you kind of feel silly sometimes as an adult, people walk around and you're reading these books. So, but I also have always had an interest in Jewish history. So, you know, the kinds of things that I want to do are all going to be Jewish, because I think it would be hard for me to see myself writing many things that are outside of that, you know, kind of the write what you know aspect. But, you know, a lot, I look at books here just not being available at all, you know, really at all for Jewish children. And I look about growing up, you know, I had such a limited availability. I mean, all of us did, of a certain generation, you know, all of us had just really, really limited availability where you have books with like Jewish characters or Jewish content, other than ones that were sort of just very, very didactic. And this is Pesach and, you know, things that weren't just very, that weren't really very engaging. So I think sort of the idea of sort of trying to correct that, which I, you know, there's just so many people trying to do that now, which is great to see that it's really sort of, I think PJ Library is a reason for that.
Yeah,
certainly for myself, but I think as a whole for what we're starting to see now.
I'm fascinated now to think about like what a story set in Hong Kong in the Jewish community or like the history would be, because I think that exploring Jewish communities in different places has given me a better understanding of Judaism that's different than mine. So you know, that there's so many opportunities over there. Are you considering writing?
I'm working. I just finished a manuscript, a YA manuscript, which is not about anything about Asia. It is a Jewish story and sort of an issues book. In terms of Jewish Asian content, I'm nearing completion a middle grade collection of short stories, and each one focuses on a different place in Asia and a different time period. Oh, wow. And four stories have, so they're all short stories, and then each one has a sort of an author's note that grounds you in the actual history of the time period. And each one features a 12-year-old child, so half are boys, half are girls. I hate that books end up being labeled as girl or boy books, but you know, inevitably they do. So I figured if I sort of have half and half, where You can't really use it one way or the other. But everybody's about a 12-year-old protagonist in each story who is featured. And they have some, they try to have a role in, a role sort of in their community and in the events in their time period without changing, obviously without changing history, because I'm very, you know, very committed to the actual history. So it has to be either things where the history is vague and we just don't know enough that perhaps this 12-year-old came in and was the one that sort of affected this change. We don't know. So I have a couple stories like that, and other ones where a child comes in and tries to do something and it just doesn't work. You know, so I want to, like, you know, one is set in 1642 and it's about the Kaifeng community in China. And there was a flood, and this is, you know, this is actual history. There was a flood. The governor wanted to get rid of the insurgents. So they cut off the dams to flood the city. Well, if you flood the city, you're going to get rid of the insurgents. You're also going to get rid of your population in your city. So that all happens, and we know that happens. We just don't know very much about the actual facts. So in my story, I have a 12-year-old boy who actually hears the soldiers talking about this plan to breach these dams. And he runs back and tries to warn not just the Jewish community, but the community widely. You know, his family finally believes him in, this is all fiction, right? And they get out. But, you know, two-thirds of the community is actually drowned, of not just the Jewish community, the community of the city are actually drowned that day. Oh. And, you know, he passes people in the street that are real people who do die that day, who we know, there's a Jesuit priest that he passes and shouts to him, and the guy doesn't really pay him any mind, and he runs into the synagogue and some people listen and some people don't. So each episode is sort of like that, where I have, you know, maybe that did happen, maybe a child tried to warn everybody. I don't know, right? So each story is like that. So yeah,
you're not messing with history, you're honoring
there
history.
Was a child, right, in Ireland who had just the British child who just had a session on tsunamis,
yeah,
who warned folks on the beach.
Oh, wow.
Well, like, I think that was,
well, this actually brings up a good question that I would love to start asking every guest, actually, because I think this, and you have history knowledge, so this is a good one for you. It was brought up today, someone tweeted that in every time travel book or movie,
right,
the main character somehow has so much knowledge of history. Right. They know about betting and football games and which team is going to win, and they know about wars and the exact dates of which attacks are going, right, to happen. Tsunamis. So if you were to time travel, what place would you go to and which time where your particular set of knowledge and skills would actually come in handy?
Where my set of knowledge goes. Well, first of all, I have to say, it's funny. Well, two things. One, I know you're not going to like my answer, but I don't do time travel. I don't really read fantasy, but I do occasionally. Not necessarily my thing. And actually, with time travel, and this is going to be like the least imaginative answer, who wants to time travel? Like, there's problems now, but we're actually in a better period of history than ever. I don't want to go get smallpox. I don't want to go be a slave. Amazing. I don't want to, like, you know, like, there's a really, you know, the Inquisition. I love researching the Inquisition. It actually affected people. I have an Inquisition story in my collection about Macau, but you know what? I mean, as interesting as the Inquisition is, I don't want to be in the Inquisition. I'm going to be killed, you know?
Like, yes, your knowledge will get you just enough information to get the heck out of Spain.
Yeah, I have enough knowledge to know that I don't want to go into any other time period.
Yeah, you know where not to be, but, like, you know how to avoid. But, I mean, honestly, that's a great answer, is that your knowledge is you know what? 2019, pretty damn great compared to history.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, women and people of color less interested in traveling.
Yeah,
well, that's what I'm saying. Exactly. As a Jew also, like, really, I mean, you know, imperfect now for sure. But I mean, there's a lot worse time periods to be in, you know? So
I'm main to that as well. So what books, and this is another question that's, yeah, very specific, is if you could recommend one or two books as Hanukkah presents this year, what would they be?
For little kids, I love, Chicken Soup, Chicken Soup. It's a Jewish Chinese story. So it's, gosh, now I'm really, the author is Pamela. Oh gosh. I can't even look for my copy right now. I will think of the author, and that's really a shame that I just did that, because I should have. But anyway, I'll tell you, it's a great story. It's about a child that has a Jewish set of Jewish grandparents and a set of Chinese grandparents, and you know, parents also as well. One parent's Jewish, one parent's Chinese, and there's a whole fight about how to make chicken soup. And they, you know, obviously the child's the one that solves the problem in the end.
By Pamela Mayer. Okay.
I can't believe I forgot that. So, So I would really recommend that one. I think it blends both cultures in just such a really, really beautiful way. It's a great story. The child really has an active role in it. And I think also maybe The Whole Story of Half a Girl by Vera Hernandi. I think that one's great also. Again, I think that many people, I mean, Jews and non-Jews as well, sort of feel themselves sort of between two cultures. And so I think it's a really, really great book and a really beautiful book about just being of a certain age when you sort of don't know who you are and you're trying to sort of figure out how you fit into the world and who you are and how these sort of pieces of you fit together. So both of those are just two of my sort of favorites. Of course, they're both Asia-based.
But we're fascinated. You know, we're Seattle based, and people will be fascinated with that. But we're fascinated with other countries and the Jewish cultures that are in other places. Yeah. So, and chicken soup sounds awesome.
It's
such a great book. And, you know, I'm working on a bunch of other things too. But actually, I have two things coming out this year. But they're nonfiction and sort of for grownups.
Okay.
But, you know, Asia Jewish base. So one is just a chapter in a book that's sort of about the Indian Jewish experience. And my chapter is sort of more of an overview just to ground the reader in how Jews got to India, why Jews are there and why Jews are in Asia in the first place. So it's a sort of a big sweeping historical view where I kind of drop into like four different communities and explain what the sort of because, you know, you sit in the U.S. and you talk about Jewish migration stories. Well, every community has a Jewish migration story. Like that's sort of our whole story is a big migration story. So I always talk about waves of migration in Asia, and I know that usually the context is usually within the U.S., but it's, you know, our communities here have waves of migration. So it goes over those waves of migration in Asia. And then I have another one that's sort of more tongue-in-cheek. That one I'm just a chapter on. The other one I'm co-authoring with two other authors that are Hong Kong-based, and it's sort of tongue-in-cheek. One has a publisher already, and the other one's going to be small. A local publisher here. The other one is most of the authors are in the U.S. or in India. I think I'm the only one, definitely the only one in Hong Kong. The other one is three of us are working on. It's sort of a combination of sort of exploring how Jews and Chinese people are different and how they're similar. And it's more tongue in cheek and kind of humorous and likely to offend sort of everybody. But as authors, we have been living in Asia for, I think I've been here 17 years. The others have been here. One's been here 40 something years. And the other is her whole life. And she's Chinese and Jewish. So, you know, she if someone has a license, she does. And then the other author has been in Asia, you know, he's one's been here for 40 years and he's Jewish. And so it'll be fun. It's sort of very, very fun. And I think we're calling it Yid Yang.
Oh, so. That's cute. Oh,
okay. I was waiting for the title. I was like, yes, this has to have
Oh my God, title. I can't remember what it was. Okay. There's lots of just stories that people don't know. And I think that particularly, again, I don't mean to pick on sort of North Americans, but I know from my experience growing up, gosh, I wish I could have a glass of wine, but I'd fall asleep. It's too much. I think that sort of in North America, you sort of maybe don't understand, you're not really given an understanding about how broad and how diverse the Jewish people are. So I think that any opportunity is to sort of change people's perspective about, you know, where we hail from, who we are, even what we look like.
I have had other people who are not like white presenting Jews asked, how are you Jewish?
Me tell you 300 years of history or 1,000 years of history or...
Or like you go to the Indian story, right? And the story I'm working on, it starts with their sort of a myth, but a migration story that starts just about the same time as Hanukkah. And that's when they place their arrival in India. So wow. I think, you know, like, how are you Indian? You know, when did you become Jewish? Well, you know, it's sort of, you get it time and time again. I mean, everybody, this magazine that I was doing, that was a big segment was diversity. And everybody that I spoke to in the U.S. had a similar story, whether they were Korean or they were Chinese, of somebody walking up to them and saying sort of they'd handled a bar mitzvah invitation and somebody would say, how is this even possible? Or they'd walk into a service, a woman, and someone would say, oh, is your boyfriend here? Are you, you know, and here's we call this a C-door. And it's, you know, I'm raising a Chinese Jewish child and, you know, who goes to an Orthodox day school, who has pretty decent Hebrew at age 7. And, you know, I know that sort of every time she walks into a room her whole life, she's going to have this. And I know that maybe things will change a bit. She's seven between now and then. I'm hopeful, but I don't know how much it really will change.
So. I mean, most of the people I know in that situation, when they're asked, where are you from? They know what the person's really asking. Oh, so they just answer.
Right.
Like, you know,
I had someone ask me where I was from, where my parents were from, where my grandparents were from. And I was not.
To try to figure out how you're Latina.
I was not cooperating. I knew exactly what they were trying to get at.
Right.
I'm going to let you keep digging this hole.
Yeah, keep on going.
Yeah, I like that. But where?
I work in a secular workplace. Mm-hmm. And I'll say that what's been really beautiful for me is that I can connect to my Asian coworkers, particularly above my other American coworkers, because I use the word festival. I talk about, you know, meals and prayer, and they understand. They're like, oh, yeah. You're probably cooking and the whole, I'm like, yes! That's how you celebrate your festivals. That's how I celebrate my festivals. We talked about dating and the expectations of the single adults, you know, the interactions. I was like, this is very similar.
My students as history students definitely felt more connected when we would cover, you know, Asian history than when we cover other regions of the world, even Europe, just simply because of the way that people bond as families and, And I think that maybe explains why it's such a wonderful community to be in, that I've heard so many good things about Hong Kong. And I'm sure a lot of people who are our listeners have heard nothing. So this has probably been a really illuminating conversation for a lot of people.
Great.
Thank you so much for letting us pick your brain and get all this information from you. I want to wish you so much luck with all your writing, and thank you for the book recommendations for guests.
Where can our listeners find out more about your community, your work, and what you're doing?
One way is if you go to my website. So my magazine is no longer running, but I do have most of the past issues up on it, and it's called Asian. It's just Asian Jewish Life. If you just look up Asian Jewish Life, you'll find it. Okay. And otherwise, what I'm doing is I do have a website as well. However, my website is not very well maintained or up to date. But it's a work in progress, but it'll get there. But also I'm on Twitter as well too. And that's sort of how we found each other. But yeah, so I'm on Twitter and very active on Twitter.
Twitter is definitely
And also the Jewish Historical Society, I should mention as well, of Hong Kong, we have a really, really great website that we've been working on for the past couple of years. And we just have a lot of plans to really expand that. And I'm going to start getting oral histories that we've recorded up on that as well. And
Recipes.
Again, I'm not really the person for recipes. Although I get asked it all the time. So because I don't cook, but actually, funny enough, if you go to our Jewish Community Center, we don't really have, it's not even like a fusion menu. Like we've got like a straight old sort of Ashkenazi menu in the upstairs, and downstairs it's sort of more maybe Israeli and maybe a little more Sephardi. So we've had meat in a dairy restaurant. So
our community here has been, you know, tracking down, because all the nonas, like, you know, there's only so much time that the grandmothers are going to be on the world. So if you don't know how to like roll your kreplach or fold them just the right way, or if you don't know how to
make your bomelas,
you have to record that now. So it's part of the living history here in Seattle. So I thought there might be something.
Yeah, well, I'll be hunting for it.
Exactly.
We'll put something on the website when we find it. But yeah, it's funny that there isn't really that much out of this community that's particular to living in Hong Kong, which is interesting.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, with pleasure.
We love having you.
Yeah, it was great.
Excited to see what's coming out this year from you.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to read, you know, your future books.
Yay.
Thank you. That makes me very hopeful.
And happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah to you too.
Great chatting with you.
Bye.
Bye.
So that's a lot of things to buy people.
I know. I think if you don't have any ideas, you could tweet us or post on Instagram, and we can, we or some of our listeners can suggest something else if you have a specific genre. I think that's the thing all the time on different Facebook groups I'm in.
Yeah.
What should I get for a 12-year-old girl? And I'm like, what is a 12-year-old girl like?
Yes. Be more specific.
My 10-year-old really liked Harry Potter. What do I get them next? I'm like,
tell me what they've already read. Oh my God.
Literally everything.
Yes. I'm like, okay, that's a lovely start, but you have to give me more specifics. Like, they've read Harry Potter and that's the only book they've read? And why did they like it? And right, did they, exactly. Were they advanced readers? Like, was it
but just, house are they in?
Yes.
What's their favorite color?
Yes. Maybe? Yes. Ask them questions. Like, is your kid a Ravenclaw? Because if he's a Ravenclaw, they're going to want to read a very different book.
Very than
if
different
he's
book.
A Slytherin.
Or a Hufflepuff.
Or a Hufflethrin. Or,
that's right.
Wait, exactly. What's a Slytherin Hufflepuff? Is there a Slytherpuff?
Slytherpuff. Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Hufflin? Like,
I don't know. I don't know. What are you?
I'm definitely Ravenclaw.
Me too. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was a Hufflepuff. And then my son goes, Mom, you're not a Hufflepuff. I'm like, but I'm so easily distracted by shiny objects.
No, but we're not as warm and loving.
As a Hufflepuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. I find
we're like, yeah.
I find hugs. Like, did you see the clip of Amy Poehler on her TV show making it? And she finds out that she tries to hug one of the competitors. And this girl is like, she shrinks back. Like, I don't like to be hugged.
No hugs.
And meanwhile, the audience, I'm thinking while I'm watching, it's Amy Poehler. You hug her.
No.
So Amy Poehler slowly waits for permission and consent and then waits to slowly go in for the most awkward hug ever. So every time Amy Poehler sees this woman on the show, she like puts her arms out like, I'm going to hug it, you know, but doesn't. And I totally get that. Like, yeah. I would have hugged Amy Poehler. I'm just saying. But it would have looked just as
right.
awkward.
Right.
Yes, right. Although it would have been nice to hug someone my own height.
Ooh.
She's on the shorter side.
You know what? Part of awkward hugging is just that you just feel like, I feel like a child being squished into someone's armpit.
Yeah, it's super awkward yeah. when really tall people want to give to the side cheek kiss. Mm. Your face, you're like, mm. I don't like it. I'm not a touchy person. I could go for a while without having physical contact, not notice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's sad.
You know what? We recharge our batteries in different ways.
And yes.
That's okay.
That is true. But that means as a mom, I have to like make an effort to like hug my children.
Right.
Like consciously.
Yes.
You know, so that they are comfortable.
Yes. Yes. Although we're at the age now that I can use it as a weapon against my children because they're like, Mom!
I mean, my weapon against my children is embarrassing them.
Also that. Have you seen me moonwalk?
No.
Oh, I don't even have to actually moonwalk. I just have to say that phrase and my daughter goes, oh my gosh, she's doing it again. Stop.
You know, the only way I can embarrass them is if there's a witness around.
Yes, of course.
It's not private. In private, they find me very amusing and I find them very amusing. It's in public.
My favorite part is that my lovely group of friends, and I'm sure you would do this also, as soon as I say you want to see me moonwalk and my daughter goes, please God, no, the friend is like, I would also like to moonwalk. And then we're both moonwalking together. And my daughter's like, you guys are like the weirdest old people I've ever met in my entire life.
My favorite is the embarrassing out the window at carpool.
Nice.
Which it doesn't work on the younger ones because it's a busy carpool, go, go, go. But for the teenager, it's a quiet carpool.
Oh, yeah.
So to open the window while I'm blasting something or listening to a podcast real loud, and he and his friends climb into my car, and he's like, Mom. I'm like, what? Don't you want to listen to Yeshiva Boys Choir sing Those Were the Nights of Hanukkah?
Oh, so good.
Oh, a Spotify subscription is also a good gift.
Oh, definitely. You can't make people mixtapes the way we used to, but you could craft them a Spotify playlist.
Oh my God. If somebody made me a playlist, husband, I know you don't listen to my podcast, but if you happen to be listening this time, a playlist is a free present.
Do you remember when we used to like carefully craft as a gift to either a crush or a BFF forever?
Yes.
We used to make collages to use as the cover. That's what I do.
Yes, I did do that.
Collages of Drew Barrymore and like random like 90s pop music.
Yes, and then you fill it with the 90s music from the radio. And then when we got CDs, you would print up those stickers to put on top of the CDs and give them awkward names. So the problem was once you put the sticker on the CDs, it didn't play in certain players.
Right. That is
so I just started writing directly like
with a Sharpie.
Sharpie on the CD. That's the only way to do it. And to give gifts. And I gave Ari the best one. Yeah, it was like, but then I realized afterwards, like, it was only half his music and half mine.
No, it was a merging of the two of yours.
It was a merge. merge music. Exactly. So those are good gifts. I think a free Spotify playlist is good if you're doing like a gift exchange. It's
here,
free.
Listen to this and then you'll get me is like a gift. Like here is a window into me.
Yes.
It's also here's things I thought that you would like. You can go either way.
Yes. Here's things I thought you would like, not based on my interests, but based on what I've observed about you. Mm-hmm. I've crafted you a custom playlist and I'm going to share it with you so that you can smile while you drive. Aww. Can you imagine that you send the person that you're dating or that you're married to that you like a playlist and they put it on while they're driving in the car? They would sit there. Every song that came on would be a surprise, and every song that came on, it would make them smile.
That would be so nice. Or here's something for when you're running.
Yes.
In the morning, or you're at the gym, or while you're sitting there furiously coding, listen to this playlist of EDM that I carefully
crafted for you. Because I know you like that.
Listen, let's bring it back.
Let's bring back for adults, because teenagers yes. still do this.
Do they?
Yes, they totally do.
I did not know that.
Yes, for sure. It's us grown-ups.
Okay, so now we need a book-related kiddish book club playlist. So that's our challenge. Okay. Drop us a gift idea and a song for our playlist.
A song for our playlist that's book-oriented. Like, we'll listen to this and we'll know what book you mean. And even if you have to tell us, like, obviously, you know, certain books go certain kinds of music.
Radioactive goes with Hugh Howey's wool.
Oh, good. Very good. Okay, so those are some really good examples. So if you can craft up combos, like Twilight goes with certain music, yes. you know, there's obvious examples.
Twilight goes with You're Hot and You're Cold.
Oh, yeah. That's funny. I like that. So that'll be a really good one. And then what we're going to do is also all the, we're going to have to listen back to ourselves to get through all the distracted conversations and yes. tangents to find what we actually recommended. But I think we started with Newish Jewish from the Unorthodox podcast. Thank you again, Woo! Because I'm obsessed with it and it's beautiful. And I'm going to get a copy for my parents for Hanukkah. Yeah. Because that's really fun.
So start there and then yeah. we'll transcribe as many of our recommendations as we can.
Yes, absolutely. And we'll put the recommendations on our Facebook and our Kiddush Book Club Facebook group. Come and join. And on Instagram and on Twitter, we'll tag as many people as possible. Yep. And we have another upcoming episode about Hanukkah and romance.
These are some steamy latkes.
Oh, that's what we'll call it. That's our next week's episode is the steamy latke episode. And it is.
So whether you're team applesauce or team sour cream, come for the steam.
Wait, the rhyme ended there, but the beat wasn't off.
I know. I was like, and then, no.
Well, thank you for coming. If you want to find me, I'm on Twitter at Hoffman Jess.
And I'm Yonit DM everywhere.
She's everywhere. The book Yenta is everywhere. She's in your soul.
That's right.
Right now.
Right now.
Think about that as you listen to our end outro music. Thanks for coming to the Kiddush Book Club.
Good night.